Call Natural Way today. Mention my name, Frank Beckman, or WJR. Get two free applications when you purchase a full lawn, tree, or pest control program. Call or click on their website today, 888-GET-GREEN or naturalwaylawn.com. Get two free applications when you buy a full lawn, tree, or pest control program. Get green, stay green with Natural Way.
From the hallowed halls of Flood Law, via the golden tower of the Fisher Building, this is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. With your law expert, Todd Flood. Brought to you by Flood Law. Flood Law, when it matters. Visit floodlaw.com. Now get ready with your legal questions for one of the Great Lakes' leading attorneys by calling 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Now here's your host, Todd Flood.
We're back. So, a lot has happened. Several things in the legal world, but perhaps the noteworthy case of the year, of the century, of the decade, is AIG. I'm hoping to have Powell Miller or Mark Newman on tonight. They were in New York on Friday, and they made a giant victory for the state of Michigan. They have proved the state has some of the best lawyers in the world. Powell Miller's firm brought AIG to justice in a civil settlement, and the New York court approved that settlement for $970 million. Well, I take that back, $970.5 million, and one of the largest class action lawsuits ever as it relates to AIG. So here, what that case was all about was the pension holders that were with the state and how they were basically taken with their pension dollars that they put in, the hard-earned money, when AIG went from $82 or $84 a share down to 40-some-odd cents, where they were doing the credit default swaps, giving loans when they shouldn't have been given loans, or securing, I guess, the insurance of loans to people that probably shouldn't have been doing it, shouldn't have been getting the loans, banks that weren't doing the proper checks and balances. Well, needless to say, they started this case off in 2008, and the long journey, it went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And Friday, they came away with a victory for all those people that are in the class, and I hope Mark is going to get on the phone with us tonight. We have a call out to him and Powell just to find the inner twists and turns of that case, one where we had Mark on once before, and he talked about it, and at that time, we didn't know what was going to happen because the Supreme Court had had a case in its hands that could have taken everything away. So my hat's off to him and all those people that hopefully can get some of the money back that were part of that class. We have a lot of things to discuss tonight. Front page of the paper, I mean, you got shock in Detroit as bodies found. I don't even want to get into it, but it's a criminal case. And it's not going to take much for the investigation, but the pathology of that case is beyond belief, where two kids are found dead, 14 and 10, in a freezer. I don't know what morbid thoughts go through a person's brain to be put in to take kids and put them in that dire hell or ugliness. That's beyond belief. Anyway, we got other topics. I got my great associate with me, Vincent Hacia. Vince, you came in another surprise. You've been working hard, have you?
Todd, it's good to be back. Keeping me busy. Never surprised to see some of the horror going through the front pages. You hit it right on the head. Wayne County Prosecutor's Office right now looking at child abuse charges for this mother. Soon, no doubt, there will be murder charges. I have no doubt there will be first-degree murder charges. Just sickening. Sign of the pure evil we've got going on right now.
Yeah, well, you know what? Here's the thing. You don't want to blunder that case. You want to have justice, so you got to do everything right. reminds me a little bit of the case that was taking place with the out in Macomb County, and Steve Urbeau, who did an amazing job in that case, but ultimately when the wife got killed and then was mutilated after that, that ended up with second degree. And this particular case, you know, they're going to go out, they're going to ultimately be charged in first degree premeditated murder to someone. We'll see how that works out. Looks like the mom is a target, a person of interest. Who knows? You're presumed innocent, but man, oh man, that's something. So, you know, the other things you've been working on and we've been talking about, man, the drugs in the schools, in the classrooms. It's not the inner city. It's, you know, it happens in the suburbs. It happens. There's no discrimination with regards to that crime. And the amount and the easiness of people to get the Adderall that they don't even realize if you get an unprescribed Adderall as a student, you got a Schedule II narcotic, you could be facing a felony, and you could be expelled from school. How often have you been seeing that type of scenario going around?
It's all over. It's running rampant. And, you know, these kids don't realize that you take your average prescription pill, whether it be a Xanax, a Vicodin, an Adderall, something that to these kids seems, you know, commonplace, that's a four-year felony. If you get it and you're packing, you know, multiple pills, you can get into the distribution level, you could be looking at a 20-year felony. And these kids, 16, 17 years old, they have no idea. And, you know, luckily, judicial justice system has, you know, programs like HIDA, 7411, programs where they can get a little deviation, get themselves put on probation, prove themselves, get the therapy that they need. But, you know, it's a sad case that we're seeing out there, and it's rampant.
Yeah, it is. And just for the listeners out there, we'd be more than glad to take your calls. This is something that's moms and dads and brothers and sisters that need to know about as it relates to this. It's changing the trajectory of kids' lives and their careers. You can call in, and we'll be more than glad to answer those questions. But what Vince talks about, HIDA, that's Senator Holmes, made up this Holmes Youthful Trainee Act, where kids that are the ages between 17 and 20 can get a free break. It shouldn't be free. It's not free. But they can get a break where there's no adjudication on their record. Whereas they plead guilty as long as they can complete their probation over whatever period of time it is, it doesn't show up on their criminal history. But the problem with that is colleges and job applications are asking, have you ever accepted a plea under HIDA? 7411, that's a statute that deals with drug charges. You don't have to be a certain age, but it can't be a major controlled substance of distribution. You can get a 7411 for certain drug crimes, and that is the same thing as a HIDA or a similar vehicle of HIDA, which gives you a person the opportunity to walk away without a record. All that being said, getting Adderall on the social media and the social websites is like buying popcorn nowadays. And the thing about it is that parents don't even know. I'm going to tell you right now, moms and dads, for everyone that has their son or daughter that has given them the cell phone, I promise you, if you check and monitor that cell phone and understand social media sites, you're going to find, even if you do random checks, you're going to find, if you have a suspicion or you have a gut feeling, you're going to find that they give away or they have many, many secrets on that cell phone. So, you know, I just found a case where mom and dad didn't have any clue. Kid gets popped with narcotics. Next thing you know, go to the cell phone, and it shows that he's doing the distributions himself, and they never would have guessed it. So, all that being said, we got a lot to talk about, and feel free to call in. We're taking calls tonight on WJR here, so we're going to be right back. It's 1-800-859-0-WJR. We got David Champagne behind the big desk monitoring the phone calls tonight. So, a few here. Oh, by the way, a shout out to my man, Paul Stavlin and Gloria got engaged.
Congratulations, guys.
All right, all right. So anyway, we'll be back right after this with Behind the Bench.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR. And get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. So, you know, these cell phones, every law enforcement agent will tell you that they ferret out 99.9% of all crimes dealing with locations of people and people confessing or making admissions or taking photos, doing whatever the case may be. I don't think many people have learned since the Kwame days that if you don't want it to be public, don't put it on your text or don't say it on the phone. But we got someone, we got Carl, I think. Carl, you with us here? I don't know, where's Carl? Maybe he's over here. Carl, you with me?
Yep, I'm with you.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. So you wanted to talk about your experience with the Urban Drug Court.
Yes. You know, I just have to say that I was addicted to drugs and alcohol for 21 years.
When did you start?
I was about 13 years old when I started.
Uh-huh.
I was smoking pot and drinking, but by the age of 15, I was doing amphetamines. That's back when Ritalin had first come out.
Sure.
And, you know, my parents caught me red-handed. They went through my desk in my bedroom and found a bag full of pills. You know, at first, my father was in complete denial.
Right.
And that's the problem. You know, my mother enabled me. My father was in denial.
Right.
And, you know, for parents that are not being attentive to their child and the child's behavior, I don't care what they say, you know, adolescents, oh, they sleep a lot and they have an attitude. That's no excuse for paying attention to your children.
Well, you know, it's a difficult situation. Kids, like parents, keep secrets, right? Kids keep secrets from parents all the time, and parents keep secrets from kids. So it's something that they grow up with and something they continue for a long time. At the end of the day, parents that are in the room with me at my conference table that come in with their children, 9 times out of 10, they're there because they love their kids. They don't want to. They don't want to sometimes face the reality that that the consequences and the ugliness for what could happen, that they want to have them come unscathed. That's not always the best situation.
That's right. And usually, if parents have a gut feeling, you know, my mom always said that she had a gut feeling something was wrong. And 9 times out of 10, if parents have a gut feeling that their child is doing something that they should not be doing, then they need to look into it.
No, absolutely. So I just went through this. I go through it on a regular basis. You start at the age of 13, you know, and you are how old now?
I'm 36.
36. So that's right, 21 years. So you've been, and now how long have you been clean?
Almost 2 years.
Okay, well. And did you go through an inpatient program?
I've been in treatment 19 times.
How many times have you been in court and busted?
I have 7 felonies.
My man, are you working?
Yes, I am working. I have 2 excellent jobs.
Good for you. That's awesome.
And anybody that says that just because you have a felony you can't find a job, that is untrue.
You know, it's the people that try to cover it up and lie about it that usually prevents them from getting a job.
My recovery is all about honesty. If you can't be honest with yourself and with others, then you're not doing what you should be doing.
What's the best court you faced? And I'll let you go. What judge and what prosecutor's office was the best one and where you were at?
Judge Young out of 6th Circuit Court in Oakland County.
Sure.
She runs the Adult Treatment Court.
Great program.
Yep, they have helped me change my life because of the rigid structure and the requirements that I have had to follow for the past almost 2 years have turned my life around. I have a wife and a kid on the way now.
All right.
I have great job. I have a great family relationship. I have good friends now that are healthy and sober and encouraging.
Carl, my man, my hat's off to you. Congratulations. And you know what? If you would call into my office, I'd love to get you into some of our programs to help sponsor or coach some others along. You can reach us at 248-547-1032. Speak to either Christina or Linda. Get them your name and number, and I'll follow up with you. My hat's off to you.
What was that number again?
248-547-1032. Speak to either Christina or Linda. Get us your contact information, and we'd love to follow up. So thank you.
Most certainly. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure. So, hey, you know what? There's a success story. I mean, I've had cases where I had a 20-year-old that I had to go through 3 years of probation with, and she went into an inpatient program, and I told her, I said, listen, you're going to one of the best programs in the country. You got to do me a favor. You got to write a book for me, and you got to tell me as a 20-year-old how to raise a 20-year-old. What is it that parents should look for in ferreting out their kids getting drugs? Where should they go? How do kids get it? How does it go from the escalation? I can tell you, there is no retirement in this crime. There's no, you don't get a pension. There's no benefits. It's either one of two things if you stay into the business. It's either death or prison 9 times out of 10. So, you know, Carl, my hat's off. That's a great success story. I think we have Jim here. Jim, I don't know, something about prove sleep apnea to keep a license. What's that all about?
Oh, I got a letter from the state of Michigan saying that I'm going to lose my license unless I prove I do not have sleep apnea.
Bro, that sounds horrific. So you got to
you got a
license restoration issue. You're in front of the Secretary of State. What is it you have to prove?
I do not have sleep apnea. I called prior to this because I thought it was a joke. You know, I haven't seen a doctor in 20 years. I'm healthy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we kept saying, you know, you must have the wrong person. Even my wife would call for me in case I had a bad attitude that day. We got nowhere. I went saw, you know, a number of places trying to find it. Nobody would touch that idea because they didn't want to mess with the state. And
right.
Trying to prove you do not have it is hard.
Well, it sounds like to me you're trying to prove water's wet. If your doctor or expert says you don't have sleep apnea, what is
it? No, even my doctor couldn't prove it because they're not an expert in it. I had to
go get an expert.
I thought this was such a joke.
Well,
the state had to make a mistake.
What's your legal question?
They wound up opening the other person's files and showed it to me because I argued with the gentleman so much that he wound up being 30 years younger than me, and the state did make a mistake.
Oh, okay.
But in the meantime, I'm self-employed, and I paid out of my pocket, out of my time and stuff to prove it wasn't even me.
So you want a civil case against the state to try to sue for, you know, basically to make yourself whole for the loss of all that money and time you had with regards to no license?
Yeah, to see if it's, you know, even worth, you know, venturing, or, you know, some people just say just live with it and let bygones be bygones. But
unfortunately, to sue the state, it's a pushing the log up a hill. You have governmental immunity, and the question's going to be several things that get into the complexity of suing the state with governmental immunity. So unless you can show some intentional act or some seriously gross error and negligence against the state, it's a futile claim.
Well, they didn't do it on purpose, but they wouldn't even look up my driver's license.
Well,
never long number would have proved it because the gentleman was 30 years younger than me, lived in another city. His doctor recommended it.
Well, I got to tell you.
His files, his medical history.
Yeah, you know, the bureaucracy there, that sounds horrific. You can call into my office, Jim. I'll have you speak with one of our lawyers, 248-547-1032, and we can delve into it a little bit deeper. You know, and I appreciate you calling in and listening. Thank you very much. So, you know, we're going to get into, I'm familiar with these college frat houses, you know, being charged in cases. U of M just had this this case up north. A couple people got charged. Talk about that. I got to tell you, you know, it's one of those things where you got to have someone doing the check and balance somewhere. The other thing I'm going to talk about, and I normally don't, but there's no lawsuit on this case yet, is the Glow Nightclub. That's my client out there, the Glow Nightclub in Ferndale. You know what? There's more to meet the eye on that. Call in tonight, 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0WJR.
If you're seeking counsel, get to know Flood Law's Todd Flood. Call the office during business hours at 248-547-1032 or visit floodlaw.com. This is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. So, we got the Glow Nightclub and Ferndale, and the citizens have come out and have requested to basically shut down Glow because the patrons and the music and the noise and the trash, they say, in a stabbing that took place, they allege, in the club. Well, first, there was no stabbing in the clubhouse or in the club. Two people ended up getting in a fight outside. As a matter of fact, I just got proof from another person that said they got it on video down the street of the stabbing that took place. And then on top of that, we just got a letter, email saying, "Give us $20,000." And they're trying to extort the owner to say that it didn't happen in there. So, all right, so you got proof to show that two people get into a fight, I guess, and have a ruckus down the street. And then they got video of people, or the club does. They have an amazing security system, and they got obviously some video equipment that is second to none, and you're going to see, I think, where that trash comes from and how it got to where it was. The bottom line is that, and the noise level, it's easy to fix. The problem with this case is, quite frankly, is that there has to be an honest and open dialogue, and if there's an agenda one way or the other, 99.9% of the time, anytime you get into these things, someone's got an agenda. Yeah, there has to be an open and honest dialogue to sit down with the folks and come up with a way to make it happen that you can bring commerce in, you can bring in an eclectic group of people of all races and nationalities, and you should be able to welcome everybody in and make good neighbors. This is going to be a case, I'm telling you now, ultimately, that to me is one where cooler minds should prevail. But, Vince, you've been following that case at all?
I have been, and, you know, the thing that surprises me the most is that this is coming out of a city like Ferndale, which has traditionally prided itself on being inclusive, and the overture, the undertone here, obviously, is race. And, you know, I had occasion to meet the owners of the club, salt of the earth people, entrepreneurs, businessmen, businesswomen.
Yeah, it's, you know what, you hate to put race into it, but that's another one. It's kind of like water is wet. I don't get it. But, hey, listen, I've been a city attorney in places where people get their pride and their passion up for where they're at. You know, they want to have a quiet home place, but also that's not Woodward Avenue. You got a club, you know, and it cracks me up. What would you rather have? It's been a vacant, abandoned place. Where do you think crime happens? Do you think it happens in the middle of Ford Field? No, crime happens in vacant lots and vacant buildings. So if you got some place there where they're willing to work and work with the city and make good things happen, that's what should happen. But we'll see. You know, one step at a time, we'll take it. So that's where we're at. So what's going on? You went to U of M, didn't you?
I did. Big shout out to Michigan Alpha Phi Kappa Psi.
Did you belong there?
I did.
You belong to that, Fred?
Four beautiful years at Phi Kappa Psi. Now,
Champagne went to state, huh?
He did, unfortunately.
Yeah. Hey, basketball, bro. Basketball. They're in the, you know, well, I don't know where U of M. Oh, they didn't make it.
And no NIT this year. Right, rebuilding year. But shout out to Michigan State, Sweet 16.
Right. But Tom so tell me about this frat situation. You were a member there. Did they do this kind of destruction up in the upper parts of Michigan?
I'll tell you exactly what happened. So let me clarify, first and foremost, not Phi Kappa Psi. This was Sigma Alpha Mu fraternity, stuff the Treetops Resort, January 17th and 18th. Obviously, big headline story, fraternity and sorority goes up on a little ski trip, some $200,000 to $300,000 worth of damage is allegedly done. So just this week, the chapter president of Sigma Alpha Mu and their social chair were charged with a 30-day misdemeanor. The 30-day misdemeanor is allowing a minor to consume alcohol, essentially. So this is something that's typically made, the statute's typically intended for parent to allow their children to drink. Now, these two people that were charged, two 19-year-olds, not even of age themselves, so their attorneys come out. He's already firing shots. He's alleging that, hey, who had the responsibility here? Was it the staff of the Treetops Resort, or was it the kids to monitor some 120 college students?
Mm-hmm.
Got a legitimate argument.
Well, you know what? They got one of the best on this case. They got Mark Krieger, one of the top attorneys in the country, if you ask me. He's a great legal mind. Mark, I'm sure, will represent his clients well, but you know, come on. At the end of all of that, I'm questioning. There has to be something more to that story than just the kids. I saw the photos of that. I want to know where the supervision was of the resort, because you just can't get away with that massive destruction without someone from the inside turning a blind eye to something. But hey, listen, we'll see how the chips fall out on that. I got to tell you, only three misdemeanors coming out of that. I would have thought there would have been a lot more just from the photos.
Little surprising. You tip your hat to the University of Michigan. They've already banished the chapter. They're going to be off campus for the next 4 years and have to reapply. It's a shame what happened. You feel bad for the residents of that area. You feel bad for the commerce that's affected. And it really puts a black mark on the university. And, you know, as a former Wolverine, a lifetime Wolverine, I should say, former fraternity member, you hate to see it because it gives everybody a bad name.
Well, I got to tell you, my heart's still with U of M. And I believe they'll get through all this stuff. I love Harbaugh. So it looks like we got somebody here. I don't know, St. Clair Shores. I'll figure this one out. We'll get to that in a moment as we can. You know, speaking of St. Clair Shores, I just got done with the Michael Notariano case. In that case, it was a hung jury. That is a case I really can't get into and I won't talk much about, but one that took the life out of me. Five weeks of doing that jury trial. One that I got to tell you, It was an amazing experience, and when it's over, when we get through the next trial, I hope to write a book on this one. So we'll be back right after this. We have a few callers that have just called in, and we want to touch base on a new topic that's going to be pretty much the questions coming in with ISIS being such a prevalent area and concern nationwide. We have Judge Rosen issuing an order for someone that may be a suspect or target to have him testify. So, right back with Behind the Bench and Flood Law after this.
Yeah.
If you're seeking counsel, get to know Flood Law's Todd Flood. Call the office during business hours at 248-547-1032 or visit floodlaw.com. This is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. Yeah, we have Anna that, you know, I got a few calls coming in, but Anna is on the line. She is asking, basically, after people that are protesting, for example, in Inkster on this case that just came up, what, you know, if cities have or states have rights to prevent people from protesting, and she uses the term agitators. Well, the First Amendment allows people to peacefully protest as long as there's no crimes or they don't incite crimes or that the gravity for which they're going about is not something that's going to cause a disturbance to the extent that it's clear. But here, anyone that's going to go out and do a peaceful protest or within the ordinances and statutes and stands in the locations for which they are allowed to do, that's perfectly allowable under our Constitution. So I appreciate Anna calling in, but not something that our state is going to prevent or cities. And people can come from near and far. They don't have to be only, as her question was, from the state. So the Inkster situation, I saw the police officers in that case. You want to talk about ugly. That did not look good. So what's the claim that if there was a civil remedy? And you know what? I haven't dissected it, so I haven't gone through point by point in of the video. So that's not fair to just give a quick judgment. But obviously, from what it looked like, it looked horrendous. Now the question is there a charge, a criminal charge coming on the police officers? And two, was there an abuse by the police officers for which the alleged victim or person that was being detained, is there something he can sue for? And that type of lawsuit, besides the assault and battery, it's commonly known in the a lawsuit under 1983 Civil Rights Act, and that is where a basically a claimant or a person that wants to sue has to show that, hey, listen, the officer abused his authority and the color of his badge, the color of law, and overstepped his bounds by a pretty high threshold of gross negligence, and get you through that governmental immunity. Here in this particular situation, you could see the beating and the suffering that took place, but hey, you got to dissect it. For me, just from the outset, armchair quarterback looked horrific. But give the chance to the officers of the city, the state, to investigate it, and the prosecutor to investigate it, and let the authorities run through their protocol to find out, you know, the truth of the matter. So that's a case, though, that is, I'm sure, ripe for someone to make sure that the civil rights of that individual were not violated. I see that, and this is a sad case. It's the first trial of a two-defendant trial where a party store owner was killed. And right out of the gate, you could see that, and this is in front of a great judge, Judge Tarnowski out in Macomb County. She is handling it, and the question becomes whether or not the defendant was competent. And a little late in the day for that particular motion just prior to trial, unless it was completely surprised by the defense attorney or there was a new attorney, but ultimately the trial went forth. Passing competency is a pretty low threshold case. They're picking the jury in that case. It's going to be difficult in that particular area, but I'm sure they will get a fair and impartial jury, one that can set aside their biases and prejudice. But I would imagine that voir dire of asking questions to find out whether a juror or not will be fair and impartial, will take some time, and will take a deft touch by a prosecutor to make sure that and a defense attorney to make sure that they're not starting off with the scales tipped one way or the other. It's going to be interesting. So, you know, we got to Judge Rosen, and Judge Rosen is forcing the cleric here to testify. And I've had plenty of questions come to me, and I see that several came in. Champagne is kind of screening. You know, what is the authority for the judge to force somebody to testify, and how does he not, if he wants to invoke his Fifth Amendment right, how is it that he can't invoke that and have the protection of the Fifth Amendment? Well, in this particular situation, the cleric is on probation, and he is in essence under the control and jurisdiction of the court system, and they can ask him questions, and they're specifically getting into that of his finances, which they have a right to do. Now, if he claims his fifth and he doesn't want to incriminate himself, you know, ultimately the judge can find him in contempt of a court order and sentence him to 93 days in jail and perpetually do that until he starts to basically go along with answering the questions. Here in this particular situation, you can bet that the government has the full court press on this gentleman to make sure that he is, in fact, complying with all the terms of probation and is not violating the terms of probation and not breaking the law. It's a zero-tolerance situation that the judge has put him on to comply. And I got to tell you, Judge Rosen, one of the most respected judges in the district court here in their Eastern District, is not someone that I'm sure this gentleman wants to mess with, and I'm sure that will, if he does not abide, will find himself in contempt. We'll see how that goes. So, we, Vince, have, what, every day it seems like there's no shortage of work, clients constantly coming in. We got everything from the fatalities of the car cases that we're handling to the complicated criminal cases. How's your docket and how's your business in Flood Law?
Amen to that. You know, we're lucky at Flood Law to be able to give back to the community. And you're right, no shortage of work. We stay busy. We work 7 days a week. And one of the beautiful things about what we get to do is that we get to give back. You know, practicing criminal law, a little different than practicing some civil law. Civil law, you're fighting for money. Criminal law, you're fighting for liberty. So we protect life, we protect freedom, but also we get to lend a helping hand to people that are in a tough time, man. You get to deal with the human aspect of that. So, yeah, no shortage of work, no shortage of love going along with that work.
Well, you know, being in the business for, I don't know, over 20 years and working through the criminal system, you know, you run the gamuts, and the great stories are the stories about Carl who goes in front of a court, and we can turn him into a positive aspect, a positive story, and someone that can give back and turn his life around. It's the cases that like that that are great, and it's also you know, the innocent. There's being a prosecutor and then moving to the defense side, you get to see a totally different side. And unfortunately, we're supposed to get it right as prosecutors and as police officers, but they're human. And often, too many times, they don't get it right. And I can't tell you how many innocent people are out there that have either been charged or you name it. You watch this story on Child Protective Services coming up. I'm telling you, there's something that's going to happen, I believe, that's coming out as it relates to just children being taken away from parents, where there's just an accusation, and then somehow, some way, the parents end up getting charged with a crime, and the next thing you know, they're losing their kids. That's a story that's going to be happening, I'm sure. If you want to talk about that, you have some experiences, we got some time. 1-800-859-0WJR. We got Champagner behind the phones. Looks like he's constantly doing his thing of looking on his own phone, but that's all good by me. Oh, no, he's reading case law. Good, good, good. Go to the law, Champagne. Good. So, you know, we got a few things that have happened. We have, obviously, the highwaymen, or not the highwaymen, the motorcycle gang case that just came back that was in front of Judge Borman. That was a case that lasted several weeks. I know that my man, Mike Rattai, the pit bull he is, he was in that case, in that trial, one where all the defendants were found guilty except for one. Prosecution in that case came from all over the place. We had the strike force. We had people from D.C. up here. And I got to tell you, it's one of those cases where if you know about it and the gang, the motorcycle gang aspect of it and the well-fought battle, it was one that when the verdict came down, there was some shock by some, but most thought the jury got it right. And I got to tell you, most of the time, it's been my experience, Vince, you've been watching, most of the time, the jury does get it right, don't they?
Amen to that. And, you know, the judicial process is a great thing, and especially in the federal court system where they get a full opportunity through their counsel to get their story out. So in this situation, you got to think they got it right, and you got to hope they got it right. Got to trust the system at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, well, we got a few minutes left to take on a couple calls. Oh, I see one. Minor in possession, and then causing a fatality. Well, you know what? I got to tell you something. We're going to cut it loose here and cut it to the end of Behind the Bench, but I just had a case where a youngster high on marijuana ended up in a fatality, killing the passenger, and just got charged with murder, too. That's a case that every parent fears, and one where there's no victors in that one. The victors in that, there isn't. That's the Valley of Tears, the loved one who was lost, and the loved one right now that's I got to defend. So anyway, that's some heavy stuff. We got a lot to cover next time Behind the Bench. We have an author that's coming on with bullying, and we have a senator coming on with what the new laws they're contemplating next year for in the Senate. So you'll catch us soon next month, first Wednesday of the month, with Behind the Bench. We'll be back then. Thanks.